Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast is adapted from my YouTube channel, and this episode is part of my Vault series, where I'm turning my back catalogue into podcasts. So, if I ever reference photos or things on screen, please remember that these episodes were originally made for video. Also, if research or references seem out of date, please bear in mind as well that some of these episodes were recorded as far back as 2016. I just want to make sure that all of my content is available on podcast as well for you to enjoy. If you wish to find me on YouTube, I am just Georgia Marie over there, and with all my disclaimers out of the way, enjoy the episode. Hey guys, and welcome back for another mystery, where today I want to share with you the tragic story of the Dupont de Ligonnès family, a case of suspected familicide where the perpetrator has never been found. Did he end his own life, or did he lead the police on a wild goose chase before escaping the country, never to be seen again? Now this is a French case, which means there's going to be a lot of French words, names and places I'm probably going to mispronounce. I'm going to try my absolute best, but my French teacher back in school literally recommended that I not take it for GCSE because I was just that bad and things haven't really improved in the last 13 years, so just bear with me. And not only is my horrific butchering of the French language a problem, it's also the fact that I cannot read French. Naturally, most of the coverage in this case is in French, as it happened in France, so I've had to rely a lot on translations and the English coverage available for this case. That's my disclaimer, let's begin the story. The focus of our story today is going to be the Dupont de Ligonnès family, who lived in Nantes in the west of France. Before the events of early April 2011, the family consisted of 50-year-old Xavier and 48-year-old Agnès, husband and wife, with their four children, 20-year-old Arthur, 18-year-old Thomas, 16-year-old Anne and 13-year-old Benoit. But this wasn't just any family. They were actually descendants of old French aristocracy. Xavier's father was Count Bernard Hubert Dupont de Ligonnès, a title which Xavier inherited upon his father's death in early 2011. This lineage, the nobility, the superiority of being a Dupont de Ligonnès was very important to Xavier. He was the sole male heir of one of France's oldest noble families. According to airmail.news, in 1754, Louis XV personally named Dupont de Ligonnès a marquis, and the line started from there. The family didn't necessarily have the money you would expect from this, though. In fact, it seems that by the time Xavier's father died, he was living in a rented flat in near poverty. Around 2011, any money that Xavier had was because of his businesses, not the fact he was born an aristocrat. He was born in Versailles and was raised in a strict, upper-class, Catholic, conservative society. In the early 1970s, Hubert abandoned his family and moved to Africa, leaving 10-year-old Xavier to be raised by his mother, Genevieve. Genevieve was a quirky woman, to say the least. She was incredibly religious and actually founded a religious sect called Philadelphia, which believed that the Pope was an imposter and that the Catholic Church had been essentially overtaken by the Jews. A bit of anti-Semitism to add to this true crime video. She claimed that she received messages from the beyond and believed there was to be a second French Revolution and apocalypse. So it's safe to say that Xavier wasn't given the most solid of upbringings. Despite this though, everyone thought he kind of turned out alright. As he got older, he turned into somewhat of a playboy, seducing women, spending money, partying whilst getting his engineering degree. Which isn't all that crazy for a teenager slash young adult with good looks and plenty of money, or so it seemed. He did find Versailles a bit suffocating though, with all of its conservative expectations. Xavier and Agnès met when she was 16, 17 years old and Xavier was 20. They fell head over heels in love, or at least Agnès did. But Xavier was somewhat of a free spirit. He didn't want to be tied down just yet and wanted to travel the world. He was only 20. So the two parted ways and off he went to live his life, travelling across the USA. Xavier always had dreams of a big, successful life. He wanted to restore his family's wealth. And throughout his time, he would start a number of failed businesses in an attempt to do this. Xavier was never the type to want a boring office job. He wanted this big, impressive life. When he returned from travelling in his early 20s, he made contact with Agnes again. It seems he decided by this point that he wanted to be with her, only she was several months pregnant this time by another man. Controversially for Catholic Versailles society, Xavier wasn't too bothered by this. He wanted to marry her anyway and agreed to raise the child as his own, and eventually Arthur was born. Everyone thought this incredible of him. It showed a really strong character and how much he loved Agnes. Of course, Agnes was from a well-off family herself, and in the years after their marriage, the family would pretty much live off of her inheritance whilst they lived in multiple towns and cities across France, growing their family as they went. Soon they had three more children together, Thomas, Anne and Benoit. In the early 2000s, it seems that Xavier attempted to relocate the family to Florida in the USA because he had aims to live this big American dream. But they spent all this money on making it happen and it just didn't. So instead, the family decided to settle in Nantes. Although the family had left strict Versailles decades earlier, Agnes remained a devout Catholic and was very involved in her faith. She worked as an assistant in a local Catholic school and she would always attend church every Sunday. According to neighbours, she was personable, nobody ever really had any issues with her and she seemed happy enough, although people do say she was quite strict with her children. In 2011, 20-year-old Arthur was a student at a private Catholic college about an hour away where he studied IT. He lived away from home but would come home most weekends to see his family and work at a pizzeria. 18-year-old Thomas was also a student. He was a talented musician studying musicology. He was said to be a shy, quiet boy and was also a student living away from home. Anne was 16 years old and in the 11th grade, where again she was said to be a good student. In her spare time, she shared her mother's passion for their religion and attended Bible study groups, and she also modelled for mail order catalogues as well. She was a very pretty girl. Benoit was the youngest of the children, just 13 years old at the time of his death. Like his older brother, he was also very musical and played the drums, as well as being an altar boy at their church. To outsiders, they seem like somewhat of a golden family, but what happened in April 2011 suggests otherwise. I've already alluded in this video to Xavier being a businessman, but the exact nature of his businesses aren't really known even to this day. There was a hotel guide for travelling businessmen, a membership card program linking clients to restaurants and hotels, there was another business linking small businesses to different networks. All of his businesses were sort of aimed towards the same sort of demographic, but none of them ever really worked out. There was one company called Stelref, which to this day nobody really knows what it was, and the accounts available on the internet still show the bare minimum information. And friends of Anne would later say that even Anne, his daughter, had no idea what her father did as a job. He just spent a lot of time in his home office in the basement. Each one of his companies had very few, if any, employees and next to no profit. It's all very mysterious and intriguing. Thanks to all these failing businesses, by 2002 the family had basically burned through all of Agnes's inheritance. According to an article in Le Monde, she often wrote on an online forum called Doctissimo about her life and struggles. It seems to me that she had no one she could turn to in real life and instead turned to the internet for comfort and ear to listen. One post from Agnes read, "I have already put many messages on this forum, but I changed my nickname for fear that my husband will recognise me here. Okay, so here it is. I have some concerns in my relationship because I have a husband who is very old-fashioned in his way of being in the family. The father is the boss. He gives an order, we execute it without seeming to question or understand, period. In his relationship with me, he plays his role of head of the family, of husband who must bring back his crust, but is neither tender nor cuddly nor attentive, in short. Add to that big money worries and you will easily imagine the picture and the atmosphere." I did have to Google translate that, so it might not exactly be word for word, but you can kind of get the gist of what she was saying. Agnes was not happy in her marriage, her husband was cold, they were having money troubles, although she mentions nothing of him being abusive. And there's another post that, according to airmail.news, reads, Xavier is too judgmental, too quick to argue, too rigid, too military. There's no more tenderness between us, no more attention, no softness, no sex. He hates when we tell him his behaviour is unacceptable. He feels attacked and humiliated. And when I ask him if he's happy, his response is always the same. Yes, I am, but if we could all die tomorrow, that would be better. That last sentence is chilling, knowing what we know now. But this was back in 2004 that Agnes wrote this on the internet, and by 2008, it seems that she wrote about things getting better. All of this predated the events of 2011 by years. In the late noughties, it seems that Xavier even began to cheat on his wife, with a woman called Catherine who lived in Paris. He would write emails to Catherine about his money worries and was even pushed to borrow 50,000 euros from her out of desperation. In a 2010 email to her, he claimed that he had hit rock bottom and wrote about how his life would end in the next few months if he couldn't get hold of money. He wrote, "I'm ruined at rock bottom like never before. I'm awake almost every night with these morbid ideas. Burning down the house after giving everyone sleeping pills or killing myself so that Agnes gets 600,000 euros. In any case, my life will end in the next few months if I don't get 25,000 euros immediately. Most of the time, I'm not in a dream but in a nightmare and I can't escape, except of course by doing something radical and final." Yeah, things were not looking good for Xavier. But it's worth noting that this was not really a family living in poverty. The children attended private school and it seems that they didn't really want for anything. This wasn't a family scraping together pennies. But Xavier had grown up very privileged, the child of aristocracy, and it would have been shameful for him to not be absolutely loaded. In 2005, Agnes even filed a police report claiming that Xavier had hit their oldest son, Arthur, and that she was leaving him. I must admit, when I found out this information, it surprised me. There's an episode on this case in the first season of Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix. It's season 1, episode 3, entitled House of Horror, in which people who knew Xavier speak about how much of a fantastic dad he was. Apparently, he absolutely adored his children and doted on them. He loved them to pieces and provided them with whatever they wanted. The children didn't want for anything, and there are so many photos of his children laughing and playing with him, beaming up at their dad. He apparently never showed any discontent with his children, but I do have to wonder. Arthur was not his biological child, just adopted. Is it possible that yes, he did dote on and love his children, but just loved his biological children more? Did he treat Arthur differently from the rest for this reason? That's a question I don't have the answer to, but there's a lot of speculation about this on the internet. What I can tell you is that pretty much everyone outside of the family said it was always so clear how much Xavier loved his children. But did he? Did he reach his breaking point? I have to question just how much the producers of Unsolved Mysteries edited their view of Xavier to fit their narrative of this all being a crazy mystery. If he was a controlling narcissist, as it seems he might have been, it makes it a lot more likely that he committed the crimes we're about to talk about. But if Xavier was a kind, caring, doting father, then adds an element of intrigue which lends itself nicely to a TV episode. It seems that around this time in 2005, the couple separated, with Xavier returning home on the 14th of October 2005. At this point, he actually wrote an open letter to his friends and family addressing the situation. And whilst the letter is way too long for me to read out here in its entirety, here's a snippet. "The delicate period between Agnes and me is definitively over. I came home on October 4th because Agnes finally accepted my return, since our separation was her choice and not mine. And she confessed the truth to me on November 20th. Everything I told you in my first open letter in early July, which many of you did not even consider, instead believing that I had a fit of rage, was absolutely accurate, and what I assumed and exposed in a second mail sent only to some of you was accurate. Agnes, having been in direct contact with you, has no reason to send you a letter, but she understands very well that I am writing to you in an attempt to erase the negative image of me she may have given you, and that you gladly believe. which disappointed me very much on your part when I had taken the trouble to explain to you what was really occurring. Of course, again, that was all translated, but you get the gist. This shows the kind of relationship between Xavier and Agnes. It shows how controlling he was. He had to write a letter to all of their friends and family to basically be like, Agnes lied, I'm not a bad guy, she's made me out to seem horrible, but I'm not. Like, writing a letter, it just seems very overly formal. But whilst that does show the relationship between Xavier and his wife, the relationship with his children is a bit more of a mystery. And so we reach April 2011, where one day it seems that the Dupont de Ligonnès family and their two dogs, Labradors, disappear from their townhouse in Nantes. No big deal, right? A family are allowed to go on holiday without telling anyone. That's not strange. Only neighbours immediately started to pick up on some very strange things, like the townhouse's shutters being down. The family never did this, even when they did go on holiday, so it looked very out of place. Neighbours also noted that only one of the family's three cars had disappeared, but this was a family of six. Presumably each person would have had luggage and they had two dogs as well. The car that had gone missing was small, it was a Citroën C5. Definitely not big enough to take the whole family away on holiday. Probably not even big enough to take half of them. And then the most telling piece of evidence something was amiss was a note that had been taped to the letterbox by their front door, which read, in French of course, please return all correspondence to sender. Thank you. A neighbour first noted all of this on Monday the 11th of April around 2 p.m. It didn't really sit right with her, but she put it to the back of her mind for a couple of days because nobody wants to seem like the nosy neighbour. But by the Wednesday, she decided that she couldn't ignore the strange feeling she had anymore. And called the police for them to do a welfare check. The police turned up and found no one answering the door, so called a locksmith to come and open the house. Once inside, they found nothing strange or out of place, but they did note that a few of the bed sheets were missing, but if a family was going on holiday, it's not that crazy that they take some bedding with them. The officers decided that the family had left voluntarily. There was nothing more they could do at that point. A couple of days later, the police arrived back at the house to search again, more thoroughly this time when they still hadn't arrived home. This time the police note that some photos are missing from their frames, but nothing more. Then they come back to search again on the 18th, 19th, 20th and 21st of April. It seems the police may have realised by this point that more was at play and an official investigation was opened on the 19th of April. For reasons I will get to in just a moment. On the 21st of April, the district attorney held a press conference into the family's disappearance. However, the DA pauses halfway through to take a phone call. When he returns, he says that the press conference is to be cut short. It turns out that in the search of the house that day, an officer had noticed something unusual underneath the terrace in the garden. Upon digging, they soon come across large buried bin bags bound with tape. Inside the bin bags, of course, were bodies, wrapped in blankets and duvets, the bedding that was missing from the house. And next to each body was a small religious item, a cross or a candle, seeming to imitate a religious burial. As you can probably guess, these were the bodies of Agnes, Arthur, Anne and Benoit, all buried in one grave. The body of Thomas was soon found in a separate grave, and the bodies of the two dogs were also found. Xavier's body, of course, was not there. The police quickly had to figure out if this was a case of familicide. Had he killed his own family and then himself? If that was the case, where was his body? Well, of course, nothing was quite that straightforward. It seems like an official police investigation had opened a couple of days beforehand because of new evidence which had come to light in the form of a letter that was sent to Xavier's immediate family. The letter was unsigned but dated April 11th and incredibly strange. In it, Xavier writes about how he's been working undercover for the DEA, the American Drug Enforcement Administration, and as a result, the entire family had to relocate to the USA to be protected as part of a federal witness protection program. Xavier writes that no one will be able to contact them for a few years because of all this, and asked friends and family to share a full story on social media to say that the family have actually moved to Australia and will be uncontactable. It's a super strange letter, but it seems that Xavier's family actually kind of believed it. He was an exceptional man and he had a lot of secret business dealings. It wasn't crazy to them that this could be something that would happen to him, so they kind of just took the letter at his word. But Agnes's family, not so much. They brought the letter to the attention of the authorities and they knew she would never have left the country without talking to them, even if to give them a full story. Although it is worth noting that to this day there's no actual proof that the letter was definitely written by Xavier. It's just kind of assumed that it was and it was signed with his name. So now they're dealing with what looks like to be a planned familicide. It looked like Xavier had killed his whole family and he was the number one suspect here. The very next day, an international arrest warrant was issued for Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès. But if all this was the case, if he had indeed killed his family, what did he do next? Did he kill himself? Investigators had a few important avenues to look into here. One, how exactly were the family killed? Two, a full forensic search of the house for evidence. And three, where is Xavier? Let's begin by looking at the autopsies. So each victim was found still in their pyjamas, suggesting they were sleeping at the time of their deaths. Evidence of sleeping pills were found in the bloodstream of each of the children, showing they had probably been drugged before their deaths. These murders were premeditated. A plan had gone into it. If the children were deeply asleep, they likely wouldn't wake up or be able to fight back during the attack. But Agnes did not have any trace of sleeping pills. She did sleep though with a sleep apnea machine, which showed that it stopped at 3 a.m. on the 4th of April and was never used again after that. And that was one whole week before the neighbour first noted that something was up. From this, investigators were able to determine that the majority of the family had likely died on the night of the 4th of April. Each of them had died as a result of two shots in the back of the head with a 22 caliber long rifle. It's acknowledged that whilst they can speculate that the family died during the night of the 4th of April, they can't pin down a date or a time for sure. A neighbour is sure that she saw Agnes in front of the house around midday on the 5th of April and then again on the 7th. Another local also saw her on the pavement outside of the house on her phone around midday on the 5th. But if this is the case, it begs the question, why did her sleep apnea machine stop in the middle of the night, never to be used again on the 4th? I assume it wasn't broken, but also she couldn't sleep without it. I'm intrigued if her phone records show this apparent phone call that she was taking outside the house on the 5th. I'm going to assume not, as I haven't found any information about this, whilst I have found information on the phone records of other family members. Maybe it was just someone who looked like Agnes outside of the house, maybe it was a coincidence, or maybe it was her. As we know, Thomas's body was found in a separate grave from the rest, and this is because it's suspected that he actually died a couple of days after the rest of his family. Whilst it seems like the rest of the family may have died in the night of the 4th of April, Thomas was actually at university at this time. On Tuesday the 5th, he spent the day at his friend's home where they played music and watched TV. Thomas had planned to spend the night at his friend's house before getting a call from his father, in which Xavier said that Agnes had been in a bad cycling accident and was in a bad way in the hospital. Thomas had to come home to Nantes as soon as possible. As you can imagine, Thomas very quickly caught the train back home. What happened upon arrival, we're not too sure. The following day, his friend tried to reach out and make sure that everything was okay, but only got very brief messages in reply, which was unlike Thomas, who generally sent longer messages. These messages read, "I'm not coming to yours, I'm ill," and "really ill, I'm not coming to class." A couple of days later, his friend received another message saying, "I'm out of battery and my dad's looking for a new charger for me." And that's the last time anyone heard from him, if that was indeed Thomas. At some point after his arrival home, he met the same fate as the rest of his family. I can't imagine how confused he must have been arriving home to not only find that his mum wasn't in hospital, but that his entire family, apart from his father, were nowhere to be found. I do have to question why exactly Xavier, if he was indeed the perpetrator of this crime, chose this particular day to kill his family. Why did he choose the 4th of April? Surely if he wanted to kill his entire family, it would have made more sense to wait for a weekend until they were all home. Thomas did visit home fairly often and Arthur was home every weekend for work. Arthur was the oldest son, but he wasn't biological, he was adopted. Maybe Xavier wouldn't have seen Arthur as the true heir to the Dupont de Ligonnès title. Perhaps he saw Thomas, his oldest biological child, as the true heir to carry on this lineage. And the lineage was very important to Xavier. Maybe he didn't intend to kill Thomas at first, but had second thoughts afterwards, deciding he couldn't leave him alive. Maybe Thomas knew some things. It's all speculation, of course, but it seems fairly likely to me that this might have been the reason. It's probably around this same time that Xavier killed the dogs as well, after neighbours reported hearing them howling for 2 nights and then silence, never heard anything from them again. On Monday the 11th of April, Anne and Benoit's school received a letter saying the children would be leaving school with immediate effect, as the family were moving to Australia and the letter was signed by Xavier. He also paid off all remaining debts the family had, including the final bills for the private school, and ended the lease on the family's home. The school where Agnès worked also received a resignation letter signed by Agnès, but when the headteacher called her to discuss, she was found to be unreachable. It was this same day that the witness protection letter was received by his close family. It seems that Xavier was just tying up every loose end he could in this week. Of course, investigators did conduct a full forensic search of the family's townhouse, but they found nothing. Literally nothing. Not a single drop of blood throughout the entire house, no suspect fingerprints, no suspect DNA. Everything was exactly as it should have been. 5 people died in this house, and there was not a single drop of blood to suggest that this had happened in any room. Whoever had cleaned up in the aftermath had been incredibly thorough. As we know, Xavier became a suspect in this case almost immediately, as his body was not found with the rest of his family's, and it didn't take much to realise the letter about the witness protection was a load of rubbish. But they needed some more substantial evidence, which they found quite quickly in the form of the murder weapon. The family were all killed with a 22 caliber long rifle, and it just so turns out that Xavier had inherited one after his father's death just a few months earlier. Xavier had never shown any interest in guns or weapons of any kind before he got his hands on this rifle. But afterwards he starts learning how to shoot, even visiting the shooting range with his sons on occasion. He asked the instructor about silencers and actually eventually bought a silencer himself on the 12th of March, answering any questions you might have as to why neighbours didn't hear any gunshots. The evidence was mounting up against Xavier by the second. But where did he go? Where was he? You're probably expecting me to say he killed himself, as is so often the case with a familicide like this. A man goes mad, kills his family and then kills himself. You're probably not expecting me to say that he went on a road trip, which is exactly what he did. And this road trip was very easily traceable. In contrast with how painstakingly perfect the house was, with not a single piece of evidence left behind, Xavier took absolutely no measures to conceal his road trip across France, leaving plenty of video footage and a paper trail for investigators to follow. If we're working under the assumption that the majority of the family were killed on the 4th of April, it seems like Xavier stayed in their townhouse for about a week afterwards, probably cleaning every inch of the house. Neighbours saw him going in and out of the house, and emails were sent to family from the home computer, proven through the IP address. He finally left the home on Monday the 11th of April and began driving down south, in the Citroën that neighbours had noted as missing. He even got caught by a speed camera on this initial journey. He was not being careful. That night he checked into a hotel in Blagnac in southwest France, where he stayed for 1 night and paid with his credit cards. Then he went to Vaclaus and stayed in a hotel there, paying by credit card again but signing in under a false name. Then he goes to La Seine-sur-Mer in the southeast, a town he'd lived in decades earlier. In La Sensimer, he contacts an ex-girlfriend, although they don't meet up. It's around this time that neighbours back home in Nantes begin to suspect something is wrong. On Thursday the 14th, Xavier withdraws money from a cash point and sleeps at the Hotel Formula One Hotel in Roquebrune-sur-Argens. Investigators think that he was taking a final goodbye tour of France, visiting places that are important to him throughout his life. This is the last day that Xavier is captured on camera in the car park of the hotel. But he didn't disappear at this point. He actually checked out of the hotel the next morning of the 15th and then disappeared, abandoning his car in the car park. He would have been carrying his backpack with him and the rifle. If a man is intending to commit suicide and not get found, Roquebrune-sur-Argens is probably an ideal place to do such a thing. It's a town surrounded by mountains, cliffs and caves. It's a very easy place for a person to disappear. But it's also an easy place for someone to pretend they're going to disappear. The Unsolved Mysteries episode on this case framed this whole mystery as being whether or not this man, Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès, was capable of killing his family and then disappearing. But I don't think it quite got it right. From all my research into this case, I don't think anyone is in doubt whether Xavier did this. A lot of his close family members do think that he was framed, saying that he had a bad back and couldn't have possibly buried the bodies under that terrace. But honestly, I don't really see how this could have been anyone but Xavier, and I don't think a bad back is reason enough for him to be seen as innocent in this case. I myself have an incredibly bad back, but I don't think my back would stop me from doing something like this if I was so inclined, which I'm not FYI. But I think the adrenaline would get you through, and I think if you're planning to kill an entire family and you want to bury them under the terrace, then you would figure out a way to do that even if your back hurt. This is a man who seemed to be teetering on the brink for a really long time, who was cold and unloving towards his wife, who loved money but had failed business after failed business. Xavier knew he was about to lose everything, so got in there first. He acted in desperation because for some reason the murder of his entire family might have been easier than bankruptcy. The mystery here is more so, where is he? Did Xavier really kill himself in the mountains, or was all of this just a ruse? Why would he leave the house perfectly clean with not an ounce of forensic evidence and then leave a very strong paper trail of his road trip across France? Why not go and kill himself in secret? I have no doubts that he would have been smart enough to go on this road trip and not leave any traces. He clearly would have planned this for a long time. Perhaps this is what he wanted the entire time. He wanted investigators to think he was dead, but really he escaped and is now living somewhere else. In late April, an intense search began of the area for Xavier's body. But despite hundreds of man hours and dog hours of searching every nook and cranny, there was no sign of him. Over the last 10 years, this search has been renewed multiple times, but to no avail. Xavier just disappeared. Roquebrune-sur-Argens is the perfect place to go in France if you want to escape. There are ships travelling in and out of the harbour every single day. There are trains which can take you out of the country. Maybe Xavier had a very good fake passport. Perhaps he really did end his life out in the mountains, and perhaps he's just never been found. But it seems too easy. This guy was clearly a narcissist. This guy thought a lot of himself, and he'd clearly been thinking about this for a really long time. Why would he want to kill himself and his body never been found? What reason would he have for his body to not be found? Some people who actually knew Xavier say that he wouldn't have killed himself, that he was way too smart for that. If there was a way to escape, he would have taken it. Many of them suspect that he's now actually living in South America, Argentina being mentioned several times. Xavier was proficient in Spanish and English, as well as his native French. And he was just a very average looking guy. There's nothing particularly special or notable about Xavier's face. He has the kind of face that would blend into a crowd very well. The perfect face to start a new life with. In June 2013, a body was found about 12 miles from where Xavier was last seen. And the autopsy didn't completely exclude the possibility of the body being his. But the prosecutor did say, at this moment in time, it is not the body of Xavier de Pont de Ligonnès, and no further details of this have been shared since. So I think it's probably safe to say that it wasn't him. I think forensic science is advanced enough by this point to know if it was him or not. To add fuel to this fire, over the years there have been many potential leads investigators have followed in their search for Xavier, all leads that suggest he is alive and well. In 2015, a photograph was sent to a journalist in Nantes. It was of Arthur and Benoit, and on the back was written, "I'm still alive, 11th of July 2013, Xavier de Pont de Ligonnès." However, investigators were never able to find out where this photo came from, and aren't convinced it's really from Xavier. It could have literally been from anyone. But from what I can gather, this was an actual photograph. It wasn't a photocopy or a printout, and it was a photograph no one had ever seen before. Obviously, the photograph was taken before their deaths, but by who, and who had it in their possession? In January 2018, police received a tip-off that Xavier had been living in a monastery in Roquebrune-sur-Argens. Apparently, several people had seen him there. Armed police raided the monastery, but it wasn't exactly the easiest of investigations because the monks had taken a vow of silence and wouldn't speak. After a 2.5 hour search of the monastery, it was determined that there was a monk there who looked a lot like Xavier, but it wasn't him. A case of mistaken identity. The last big lead in this case came in just October 2019, when a man was arrested at Glasgow Airport in Scotland after arriving in on a flight from Paris. The passenger had entered details corresponding to a stolen French passport, and it was immediately suspected that it might be Xavier. French authorities intended to intercept the passenger at the boarding gate in France, but the passenger actually made last-minute changes to his flight and flew the night before instead, so was intercepted by Scottish authorities instead upon landing. Word got out about this to the media, and Scotland reportedly told France that this was definitely the right guy after they fingerprinted him. The media in France just went mad, but the very next day it was revealed that, of course, it wasn't Xavier. It was a completely innocent guy whose passport had been stolen years before and he'd replaced it, and the replacement had flagged up on the system. Poor guy. Which, I suppose, brings this video to a close. It doesn't seem like investigators are any closer to finding Xavier, either dead or alive. There is, of course, a chance his body is in the mountains and it's just never been found. But there's also a chance that he escaped and is sunning himself in Argentina as you watch this. One of his many businesses was NetSurf Concept LLC, a company which was run by a man called Gerard Corona. Corona specialised in helping clients open foreign bank accounts and obtain anonymous bank cards, so they could withdraw money out anywhere in the world and not be traced. Interesting. So I have no doubt that Xavier would have had the knowledge as to how to disappear without a trace, and he definitely had contacts. Xavier's family do have issues with all this, as you'd expect. I mean, nobody wants to believe their loved one is capable of such atrocities. Not only do they believe him to be innocent, but they also don't even believe that the bodies found were that of the family. The family's funeral was held on April the 28th, really not long after their bodies were discovered, and incredibly fast with such an intense police investigation. Sometimes in murder cases, the bodies are held for months. So it was surprising to everyone when the prosecutor announced that the bodies were being released for burial on the 22nd of April. Their relatives were advised not to view the bodies due to the state in which they had been found, which has led to theories within Xavier's side of the family that it just wasn't them. I'm not sure what they believe on the back of this. Perhaps they do really think that they've all gone into witness protection in the USA. Maybe that would be a nicer story for everyone to believe. Maybe they think that this is all just a huge cover-up from the USA. And I really do sympathise with them because I can't imagine what I would do or what I would believe if one of my loved ones was accused of such a horrific crime without undeniable evidence. I'm very interested to hear what all of your theories are about this case. I don't have any doubt that Xavier did kill his family. It seems that the signs were there in the lead up for years. Some suspect that someone else framed him, but I can't really see how that would be the case really, unless you really stretch what we know here.
Maybe Xavier just got himself in a really bad business deal and paid the price. Maybe he owed the wrong person some money. I don't know, but I think if somebody wanted to make him pay, they would do literally anything else other than kill the family and then frame him. A hitman probably wouldn't go to so much effort, they would just kill them. Like, if this has just been a huge hit from some big company that maybe Xavier did wrong, I can't imagine what their end goal is here. Like, how would they sort of achieve anything from making the police think that Xavier is on the run when really he might be dead? Or maybe he's not dead. I don't understand why somebody would want this to happen. Surely they'd just kill his family and then him. I think knowing what we know about this case now, about the letters, about the emails, I think it was likely Xavier. But do I think he escaped the country? I really, really don't know. I find it hard to believe that anyone can evade detection for so long. How anyone could just be happy to murder their entire family and then start afresh in a new country. But I know it's something that some people, perhaps Xavier, are capable of. I do believe he had the knowledge and the contacts to do it if he wanted to, but did he want to? Or is his body just in the mountains somewhere, yet to be found? This is perhaps one of the most insane cases I've ever covered on this channel. It is absolutely beyond belief and it is so, so sad.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Mysteries and Histories. If you have a bit of time, I would love for you to go and leave a review wherever you're listening to this podcast and spread the word. It would be much appreciated. I'll see you next week.